My name is Jerry Coulter, and, you're talking a long time ago, a long, long time ago. You're talking the early 90s, possibly. I had a vehicle stolen that was actually stolen as a result of the theft was facilitated by the Deputy Chief Constable May of Dorset Police, because he refused to impound my car under Section 19 of PACE, and then he lied about it, that he didn't have the power to do it, which allowed the thieves that had my car to chop my car up, that they were bragging to me they would do, and basically they did it, with the tip of the nod, not only for Dorset Police, but for the highest ranked copper in the force, apart from the Chief Constable.
Now, am I right in thinking that your car was stolen and either a day after or a couple of days later, you actually saw it on the forecourt of a garage for sale?
Exactly, and they wouldn't impound it. And they, that was all because the garage owner's brother was a serving Dorset Police Inspector at the time, who thought he could walk on water. And, everyone moved against me, the victim of the car theft. And I had London lawyers putting in complaints about this that went, I had the Complaints and Discipline Department in Dorset speaking to me in the most hostile terms and telling me to keep out of Dorset because I'll get hurt, not knowing that I was fighting in Japan, knocked down karate, and just got off an aircraft from a karate tournament when they're telling me this. The last person to tell, don't come down to Dorset because you'll get hurt, is someone who's a full contact karate fighter. And it just escalated from there. Only I, instead of getting involved physically with these people, I put it all in the hands of London lawyers, because I thought, if you get close to me and do what you're threatening to do with physical violence, it doesn't bear thinking about, because I'm not frightened of that. So I put it in the hands of lawyers, and it went through the complaint system right up to the Deputy Chief Constable, who then lied about his powers. But he lied about his powers while they were chopping my car up. And then they reported the car stolen, again, from the car dealers. And that was facilitated by Deputy Chief Constable of Dorset, Deputy Chief Constable May. They wouldn't let me make any criminal allegations against him for misconduct in public office, for lying about his powers and lying and covering up for his car dealer and the other scumbag coppers in the complaints department and the inspector brother that the car dealer has. They all closed ranks against me and tried to force it into civil litigation. I never wanted civil litigation. I didn't want compensation. I didn't want money from taxpayers for their misconduct. I wanted them facing criminal charges for misconduct in public office, for lying about it all and covering it all up, trying to. If I go through a camera above the speed limit, I get nicked. No one covers it up or does anything to me, so why should they? And so that Deputy Chief Constable May, they had early retirement with an enhanced pension, because they gave him a pay rise that was in the newspapers down there immediately before he retired. Now, how much is that a slap in the face to me? And so we were publishing all of this on the internet, what was going on.
Yeah, I think you had a website about the Dorset Police, didn't you? And what was that? What was that explaining, the connections between these criminals and top police in Dorset?
Exactly, and the top coppers in Dorset were allowing them to do all this, and threatening the victim of a car theft. That was the worst thing about it. They seem to think they can threaten you with physical violence.
So what were the connections between these people?
There was a number of connections, but one of the ones, when I was lobbying members of the police authority about it, was saying, don't get involved, it's all to do with Freemasonry and everything. But me being a London lad and not living in Dorset, I made a point of getting hold of one of their membership lists. What did I find? Find all the bastards in charge in the police authority and all the people that were giving me short shift were all orbiting mainly two lodges or three lodges. One of which was Dorset Master Mason's Lodge. And 137, I think it was, Amity Pool. It was about three lodges, right? All of them were in these lodges, right? Well, that to me a mathematical common denominator, those large numbers, that add up to a rather unhealthy relationship. I can't prove that there was any sort of conspiracy, but it certainly is unhealthy.
Yeah, well, the one thing about Freemasonry is everything that goes on in the lodge is kept within the lodge, isn't it? They actually swear vows of secrecy. I mean, it's the perfect cover, in a way, for criminal gangs.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, you know, and I'm saying is the common denominators are the fact that they're all there. And that is an unhealthy common denominator. So I was publishing it all, you know, and again, I was being threatened, and threatened in a full contact karate fire.
Yeah, well, so they've obviously, they picked on the wrong car to steal that night, didn't they?
They certainly did. And they also threatened the wrong person, because most people would be too frightened to get one of those books and publish the results. But I'm not. I'm not frightened of people. You know, that was the first thing wrong. The second thing was wrong is that I had the financial resources to stick it all in the hands of London lawyers. So everything I was publishing was the letters between my lawyers, the police authority and people like that over the criminal offence that's being committed by the Deputy Chief Constable for lying about his powers to impound my car before they chopped it up.
Okay, so do you want to tell us what happened down the legal route?
Well, down the legal route... I never, you know, this should never, they forced it into civil litigation. And I never wanted it to go there. Never wanted it to go there because it wasn't a civil matter. It was a criminal matter. From day one, it was a stolen car. And then with the coppers moving against the victim instead of moving against the criminals, that was a criminal offence. It was misconduct in public office. It's a common law criminal offence. And, but... for whatever reason be it, because we couldn't go anywhere with it. You know, the predecessor of the IPCC was the PCA, the Police Complaints Authority. You know, my MP sent the criminal allegations to them and came back and said that I should have taken it up with the insurance ombudsman. Because when my Jeep was stolen, I tried to do an insurance claim. First of all, the insurance company wouldn't accept the claim because the whereabouts was known. It was on a Dorset car dealer's bloody, in his showroom. That's the first thing. So the whereabouts, and said, sorry, it was a civil matter for me to start legal proceedings to get the car back, despite the fact that I also had legal cover on my policy and they wouldn't let me invoke it. So I had to pay for all that. And then when I did start proceedings with London lawyers against the car dealers to get what's called an Order 14 from the court for delivery up of my car, they chopped the thing up and reported it stolen. But they were bragging to me that they were going to do it. And the Deputy Chief Constable of Dorset allowed them to do it because we were writing to him telling him that this was going to happen, that they were bragging to me that this was going to happen. And he was lying about his powers that he had under Section 19 of PACE to impound it.
So you've got a website by this point, yeah?
Yeah. So I take it, this is how I personally feel with the injustice I've got, that the person responsible for theft of my car was Deputy Chief Constable May. The car dealers I knew were scumbags. We knew they were going to do all that. All of that we knew. But he allowed them to do it and facilitated it. That's what I can't accept.
Yeah.
Someone at his rank and position and get away with lying. And then he was given a pay rise and an enhanced pension and retired because of the allegations I was making.
Well, I suppose at least you've got this one guy out of the system. Was there any evidence of other crimes that these people have been committing or other chief constables doing similar things?
Yeah, because all the others that came in behind him covered it up when we tried to get them to deal with it. So that, you know, even to this day, if I try to get the present one to look at it, they'll just say, oh, this has all been dealt with, this has all been looked at, this has all been investigated. Because they won't challenge the reports that the others have done, which is a stack of lies about me. Mm. And saying, and you'll love this, right? So when my lawyers did settle civil proceedings against them, And I don't know how this happened, because I never even really gave them instructions to bloody do this, but they did it. And they, when they settled proceedings against them, they struck me out as being vexatious. Well, of course I'm bloody vexed. I couldn't be more vexed. I'm a product of what they made me. But also, because they made me vexed, why should I be denied British law? Why should I be denied legal redress?
Well, look, over the years, Jerry, we know that there've been, you know, a whole series. In fact, there was a programme on the TV called Rough Justice about the problems with the British legal system, that certain cases, it seems as if you've got untouchables out there, that as soon as any case comes against them, that
they say you're vexatious. And they just say you're vexatious and strike it out. Yeah, but you're bound to be vexed. How can you not be vexed with something like this?
Well, of course. Okay, so what were the consequences of you putting the website up then?
Because I was all over I was flying in and out the country to Japan. I was in Eastern Europe. I was all over the place on business and being an international karate fighter and everything else. And I was approached because my phone number was published as well for other victims to contact me. And I was approached by, supposedly, a group of Eastern European mercenaries that, instead of me spending, bear in mind I was spending £100,000 on legal fees and barristers and everything, and barristers' opinions, which didn't account for anything, you know, they offered to actually deal with these senior coppers in Dorset outside the law. Put it that way, as much as I will say. A group of Eastern European mercenaries offered me instant justice for a fraction of the price the barristers were costing me. And but they got my address and my phone number, and I'd got young kids. And I was concerned about these people. I was very, very concerned. They're offering me their services. They knew that I was a businessman. They knew I had a lot of Japanese money behind me at that time because of my marriage and everything. I knew I was in and out of Japan and as well as in Europe. And I was very concerned for myself and my family at that time with them. Not only did I have coppers threatening me if I stepped foot in Dorset, I've now got these people offering me their services. But not only were they offering me their services to deal with people in Dorset, they were trading off the Jill Dando job. They were telling me that they shot her. They were using it. They're bragging about it.
Well, that might just be bragging, mightn't it?
It might well be. It might well be. But I thought, well, I am going to be going to Hungary. And this is where they were operating from. At that time, they were operating from Hungary, from Budapest. And I said that I would meet them and speak to them, because what I was going to say to them when I met them was, look, you know, thanks for your offer and everything else. At the moment, we're trying to go down a legal route, and I've spent a fortune on lawyers, only to be told by the courts, basically, to bugger off and take my legal team with me. And I met them mainly because, as I say, I thought I'd sooner meet them on their own turf than have them knocking on my door. And
when was this? Because Jill was murdered in 1999. I think it was April 99, wasn't it? How does your visit compare to the timing?
Well, this was, at that time, I think they arrested Barry George. I can't remember the exact time chronology, the exact timeline, but I believe the police had already arrested Barry George and were in the process of fitting him up for the murder of Jill Dando. And I've got this lot telling me that they did it. They even told me the weapon they used was a Russian Tokarev pistol. They even told me that.
So right? Is there any evidence for that?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm only going on what I was told. And I met these people in Budapest. I can't remember now in this pool the name of the guy, but I did make notes. And he was their main ramrod. He was supposed to have been an ex Hungarian paratrooper. And I met him in a flat in Budapest. I met him in a bar, first of all. I was taken to a flat. And they had the whole team there, all with, like, skinhead-type shaved heads, army boots and sort of quasi-army-type khaki clothes and jeans. And they were all speaking an Eastern European language. I do know Petrikov. Petrikov was the name of the guy who I met in, who was claiming they did the dando job and that they were a professional mercenary outfit. And they were Eastern European and they were all speaking a language. I don't know what that language was. I don't know if it was Hungarian, if it was Serbo-Croat, if it was Russian. I don't know what the language was they were speaking in there. But he spoke, Petrikov himself spoke a number of languages, English being one of them. And they did look like, well, not like ex-squaddies. They looked like someone were bloody serving. I don't know. I mean, but you know what they look like. They all look alike, whether they're British ones, Russian ones, or whatever, you know. And especially with quasi-military-type clothing that they were wearing. And
What about the actual bullet? Because, I mean, she was executed on her doorstep, and I think they did recover the bullet, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean, I think, as far as I know, in that case, it was a 9mm Parabellum round, which is the same round that would be fired from a military-type pistol. It's the same round. Originally, it was used in the Second World War in the Luger and in the German Speicher machine pistol. It was later used in the Uzi 9mm machine pistol. It's also used in the Heckler & Nock carbine that the automatic carbine that the British police use, that the British Armed Police officers use. It's a well-established round, very powerful handgun round. It's used in NATO, was used in NATO Browning high-powered pistols. It's a very, very powerful pistol round, and also a carbine round. And they fitted Barry Joyce up right royally. He was an idiot. He was ESN. He was of low IQ, and they kept using the word firearm residue. Firearm residue to us is barrel fouling. It's the shit that's in the barrel, or when you shoot the gun, the nitro spit that comes out and flicks out and, you know, goes everywhere. Nitro bits could come from anything, come from a firework, can come from a cat gun, it can come from anything. You know, nitro spit or bits of nitro could come from a whole plethora of things. Even party poppers. You know, party poppers would produce burned nitro particles. And they found some particles of that on his clothing. And they claimed that he had converted a starting pistol to fire a 9mm Parabellum round. Well, look, you know, I have a real in-depth knowledge of firearms. Trust me, I do. You know, in fact, now I even deal in the things. I'm a licensed gun dealer. You know, I have a really in-depth knowledge of firearms. I'm also an engineer with a Rolls-Royce aviation background. Even with access to Rolls-Royce machine shops with multi-access machining equipment and high precision tolerance machine tools, right? I could not convert a starting pistol to fire around like that. I couldn't do it, and I'm a professional engineer. How was that idiot going to do it without a machine shop in a back shed with nothing?
Well, let's just look at Barry George for a minute. Jill Dando was shot dead outside her home on the 26th of April, 1999.
Well, that is, again, a professional hit. We walked right up to someone and hit them at close range.
Yeah. Barry George was arrested on the 25th of May 2000, so just over a year later, and charged pretty much straight away. He had Asperger's syndrome. They had lots of different personality disorders, antisocial, histrionic, narcissistic, and possibly paranoid. Various. I mean, he was in a bit of a state, really. Anyway, so he was sentenced to life imprisonment in July 2001. And he appealed in 2006, his lawyers got another appeal on press evidence. And in September 2006, there was a BBC Panorama documentary about miscarriages of justice was broadcast. And in 2007, June, the Court of Appeal took a look at it all. 5th of November 2007, they actually got round to doing it. And on 7th of November 2007, Court of Appeal reserved judgment on the case. 15th of November, announced the appeal was allowed and the conviction quashed and he was released.
Yeah. But what's happened about the miscarriage of justice of picking him up? What about all those people that lied?
Yeah, well, that's another big question.
Yeah, that is the biggest question to me. What about that? That to me is a bigger question than what happened to Jill Dando. Jill Dando, from day one, the moment she took that job and became the face of the police and the authorities, she became a target. Much like Shaw Taylor did at her predecessor, right? For anybody that wanted to have a go at her because she was the front of the authorities and various people, particularly in the London underworld and people like that, didn't like people telling tales on them and especially being encouraged to give information to the police and things like that. So they knew from day one they were a target. And they took no steps to protect themselves or protect their movements or whatever. And looking at what we now know, because don't forget there was the NATO bombing of civilians in Serbia, and they destroyed the Serbian counterpart to the BBC and killed one of their journalists, that it was probable that Jill Dando was selected because she was a BBC journalist that was the front of the police and the authorities here.
Well, in 2014, the Mail reported that Jill Dando had tried to get her bosses to investigate an alleged paedophile ring inside the BBC, but nobody wanted to know. She took the names then to Paul Condon, who was then the chief constable of the Metropolitan Police. So, I mean, I suppose she's trying to do her job, but it looks to me as if that information that was taken to the chief constable of the Met might have got on into the wrong hands.
Anything could have happened, I don't know. I really don't know. But for whatever reason, whether it was to do with Serbia, whether it was to do with anything that was happening here in the UK, she was a target. And if you're talking about Eastern European professional mercenaries, it's a professional hit. They're not interested why someone wants to bump somebody off. All they're interested in is you pay them the money and they'll do it.
Now, look, since all this has happened, Jerry, we've also had all these revelations about serious criminals, including murderers and rapists, actually serving within the Metropolitan Police Force and nothing being done about it.
None of this surprises me. You know, if you can turn the victim of a car theft into a criminal and treat him like one. Yeah, absolutely nothing surprises me with the authorities in this country. It's turned on its head, you know. People that deserve to be prosecuted don't. People that don't deserve to be prosecuted and victims of crime are treated like criminals, especially if you complain. You know, nothing. Yeah. Nothing surprises me anymore. Once upon a time, I used to be surprised and shocked when all this was happening to me, but now I'm not.
Well, look, okay, so you've come back from Eastern Europe, back around when you went over there, 2000-ish, with some quite important evidence about this execution of Jill. Did you take that information to the police? Did you take it to the press? What happened?
I even told Dorset Police that I had these people offering me to bump off Dorset coppers. And They wouldn't even speak to me.
Did anything happen with that information that you'd come back with? Valuable information about her murder?
Nothing. And at the time, nobody was suspecting there was any Eastern European connection or anything else. And I was being treated like a criminal myself. Because I was complaining and paying London lawyers to write the complaint letters. And I was being threatened. You know, this is what, the only time I had any verbal conversation with the so-called complaints handling coppers in Dorset, you know, was limited. And not even being threatened in writing as well in some letters.
So this week we've had revelations that this guy, Milorad Ulimek, twice convicted killer, who's serving 40 years in prison, may have been Jill's killer. He's a Serbian.
He might have even been in that room in Budapest. I don't know. This is the problem. I don't know these things. But certainly they were telling me that they were responsible for it at that time. And I was telling people. I was telling my lawyers. I reported it to Dorset Police. For what good that did. To tell you the truth, their integrity wasn't much different from the bloke who's serving time in Serbia.
So, what advice have you got for people dealing with the police? Obviously, on minor matters, things might be fine. If they start getting pushback where they actually start treating you as a criminal, what's your advice for them? Not everyone has got the resources you had to get lawyers, and it doesn't look as if that route was very successful anyway. But how can you deal with a police force when it's showing signs of corruption?
The only way I think that you can deal with it is how I've had to deal with this and reach some sort of rationale with it, is to tell the story. Say it. Name them all. Name and shame them. You know, it's no one's dragged my ass into court for libel, despite them threatening to do it. Why? I'll tell you why. Did you know libel is one of the only civil suits in British law? It's rarely been done in the 500 years of the British courts where you can consolidate a criminal action in it. I could defend a civil suit of libel if my defence is that the other person committed a criminal offence. And because libel is tried by a jury, you can consolidate and run a private criminal action against them at the same time as your defence is being heard. Very rarely done, probably very, very expensive to do, but it can. It's doable. It's doable. Not many people know about it.
I suppose, well, this sort of stuff is possible so long as we still have freedom of speech in the London newspapers. I know the Daily Express actually did pretty much verbatim print your story, didn't they?
They did. But I at the time when I was telling the story, I did get some journalistic exposure. But as I say, I reported the whole thing to Dorset Police because they were the people who were... that I was being offered a target. And of course, I suppose you could say, because I was trying to deal with them through the legal routes and through the courts, and anyway, not knowing that, you know, the integrity of the bloody legal system wasn't going to allow me to have justice. And so the only justice I've got is to publicise it all. And when I publicised it all, I then get a bunch of Eastern European mercenaries contacting me. And like I say, I went over there to speak to them because I didn't particularly want them knocking on my door with my wife and kids.
No, of course not. Anyway, look, Jerry, it's fascinating hearing your story again. And also, you know, this one is one that, like any miscarriage of justice, generally they just refuse to go away until there's some kind of closure. I know the journalist Don Hale also has done quite a lot of reporting if people want to look his work up on this. And I think at the end of the day, the message from you it seems to be taking is that if you're coming getting this sort of criminal pushback by the police, that go and talk to journalists. Go and make sure that...
And self-publicise it all, because a lot of the time, you know, most journalists weren't even interested in my case over the car being sold. A deputy chief constable facilitated the theft of a bloke's car. And they, the amount of money they spent fighting me in the courts and legal actions. I mean, they spent hundreds of the cost of the resources they spent dealing with me and producing minutes of police authority meetings when my case was being discussed all the time because I was making criminal allegations against a former deputy chief constable. They don't spend budgets like that on bloody county lines drug dealers, and yet they spent that sort of money against the victim of a car theft. Only because the deputy chief constable facilitated the theft of that car.
Well, it was a fascinating, it ended up as a fascinating story. From your point of view, a little bit troubling, but for the rest of us, to hear that actually the story finishes, in a way, over in Hungary with the potential killers of Jill Dando. They may have been boasting, but it's quite feasible that they may not, because that was an era, wasn't it? You know, the turn of the century, around about 2000. But there were a lot of former Eastern European, Soviet bloc soldiers looking for jobs to do, and they would be, I suppose, the perfect kind of person for a hitman to pick on to do a job like that. Anyway, look, Jerry, I don't know if you ever do social media or anything like that, or you still got any websites, have you?
Well, over the years, I've stopped publishing it, and everything. I do still tell the story, because this is what I'm saying. If you are the victim of that level of abuse of power that I had thrown at me to protect a deputy chief, and the fact that he fronted himself against me rather than just taking my car into the police yard and letting me get my order 14 from the court, that they've moved all that resources to fighting me instead of the people that stole my car. That's what I still to this day can't get closure on. And the only way I can live with it is to tell people like you the story or publish it online, which is what I did. And what did I get out of that? I ended up with a load of mercenaries up my arse.
Okay, Jerry Coulter, thanks very much for joining us.
Cheers, thanks.